Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
You're listening to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Break them.
Hey, we are still well into county fair season, and the Lincoln County Fair is kicking off later today and going on through the weekend over at the Merrill Festival grounds. So if you're anywhere in that area, stop out there or any of the other great events that are still happening before summer's over. Welcome to the third hour of Up North News for this Wednesday, August 17th. I'm Pat Kreitlow, along with Dr. Kristen Lyerly and Luke Mathers. And coming up in a bit, State Senate candidate Jessica Katzenmeyer. Tomorrow, Joe Zepecki will help us look through the Marquette poll findings that are going to be released today. And then on Friday, we'll talk about Netroots Nation, a big progressive conference taking place in Pittsburgh, of all places, this week. The big news, Kristen, this week, well, let me take this back. The big news this week has been Donald Trump and the search warrant and people like Tom Tiffany trying to make excuses for Trump, when the actual big news that affects Americans is the signing of the Inflation Reduction Act, a version of Biden's domestic agenda, which was once called Build Back Better. This was something that did not look like it was going to ever get done. Joe Manchin, senator from West Virginia, kept resisting. Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona, really proving that, you know, when you only have 50 votes in the Senate, it's hard to get the least Democratic with a capital D member on board. And as a result, compromises have to be made. But Kristen, I'll admit, up until a month ago, I didn't think this was happening.
I didn't either. I honestly don't know what it was that got Manchin into this conversation. Maybe you have better insight than I do, but something obviously intrigued him. There was some change in the fundamental structure of the bill, but even, I mean, so much of the climate information that was able to be passed is really very shocking to me.
There were definitely compromises made, both on energy policy for Manchin and on tax policy for Sinema, but it did get done. It's a bill that will, in fact, lower healthcare and drug costs for many Americans. It will make it much more affordable for almost any American to adopt clean energy products. It will create millions of jobs. It will reduce the deficit. It will make the tax system more fair.
But wait. It will, let's say this a couple times. It will reduce the deficit.
Yes.
I think, which is really important. I think as we're talking about like messaging and how do you get information out there, it's really important to say that this government is reducing the deficit. That is such a huge talking point for Republicans. So the Democrats are reducing the deficit. Yes?
Yes. And doing so in part by finally going after the tax cheats that so many Republican politicians have been protecting. And of course, again, people like Tom Tiffany and Ron Johnson are trying to tell you, you know, that it's going to unleash thousands of IRS agents to come after you. And it's in that same vein of, you know, they're going to take away your guns. Mm-hmm. Folks, nobody wants your damn guns, and nobody's coming after you for your taxes when, you know, where the attention really needs to be focused is on the billionaires and the large corporations that have received sweetheart treatment from people like Ron Johnson and have not paid their fair share of taxes. And you and I have had to make up the difference. Mm-hmm. That is going to bring in the revenue, a lot of it that's overdue. That is going to reduce the deficit. However, I got to say before we leave this entirely, at the bill signing ceremony yesterday, Joe Manchin agreed to be up there on stage, you know, along with some others. And if you have not seen it yet, you must go look at a short clip of video right after Biden finishes signing and people start applauding. And President Biden leans over to hand one of the pens to Joe Manchin, who has been trying so hard to put distance between himself and Joe Biden. And at first you can see Manchin kind of refuse, you know, just kind of try to take a half step back, and Biden's not letting this go. He is holding that pen there, and the look on Joe Biden's face, which I can't say exactly what I think it says because I'd have to use some curse words, but in essence, the look from Biden says, how do you like me now? Take this pen. Take this pen. You're going to have your picture taken with me because you helped me get this done. And Manchin, if he didn't want that, he shouldn't have gone up on stage anyway. But it was just a couple of weeks ago I was saying I don't think that Joe Biden can get it done here. I thought decades in Congress and he's not going to be able to push a deal through. And that look on his face, Kristen, was priceless.
I haven't seen the video, but you know I'm going to go look it up now. But I think it just really underscores how politicians want all of that glory and that attention and that money. Like it's not about the actual meaning of it. So, you know, Manchin cut this deal and got whatever he wanted out of it and is standing up there because he wants to be recognized for it. And to be put on the spot like that, I think is it's entertaining, to say the least.
It was the most entertained I've been. And the second most would be the tweets afterwards, where former President Barack Obama tweeted out, "This is a BFD," talking about the Inflation Reduction Act. And did you see what Biden tweeted back? Thanks, Obama.
Perfect. I love it.
That's the proper punctuation for something like this. Now, over at UpNorthNewsWI.com, Kiev Akil has written an article about five different ways that the Biden administration's leadership is going to help Wisconsin. Everything from the Inflation Reduction Act to the CHIPS Act, the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, and the Infrastructure Improvement Act, and of course, the American Rescue Plan. Look at the details on that and what it means to Wisconsin. When we come back, Jessica Katzenmeyer, candidate for state Senate, who's making history in Wisconsin. That's coming up next. You're up north.
Hey, wait a minute, Pooh, stop it.
You know what we'd like is for you to be a subscriber to our newsletter, and to do that, this fine product that I put together every afternoon, you just have to go to upnorthnewswi.com and click on newsletter up in the top banner, and you will join roughly 47,000 other close friends and relatives who are subscribers. And you can also like us over on Facebook by searching for Up North News WI and be part of the, where's my latest number there? Something like 67,000 people who are following us there. So we really appreciate you doing that and for joining us here on the brand new radio show, which, I mean, I'm only bringing in so many people. Kristen Lyerly here is bringing in the lion's share of it. thank you for doing me that favor.
It's always a pleasure. Oh, Pat, the hall to my oats.
And it was all right. And so it was Kristen who, as we started talking about, you know, the folks that we should talk to, who are running for office, and some of them are real trailblazers. And that's how we got to learn about and can't wait to visit with Jessica Katzenmeyer, who made history this week, becoming the first transgender woman in Wisconsin to advance past the primary for a state legislative office. It's not why she ran. All the issues that you're going to hear about, but making history, pretty big deal as well. Jessica, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for having me on.
It's, you know, we're seeing, and it was noted here by CBS 58 in Milwaukee, a record number of transgender people running for state offices. And I think that you noted the timing, that at a time when abortion rights are being stripped, the LGBTQ community, you know, is wondering where is the next shoe going to drop. So along with the typical legislative reasons for running, let's go ahead and talk about, you know, what is unique and historic, and that you hope someday is not so unique and not so historic about who represents us in Madison.
Well, absolutely. I think representation in our state legislature is huge. And what I mean by representation is people who look like the population here in our state, you know, having diverse representation, having diverse women running for office, because what this does is that this brings more voices to the table, I think, and this brings new ideas to the table. And this is where change really begins to take place. So, I mean, what a year we've had in the campaign cycle so far, because who would have ever known that this would be the year that Roe gets overturned? And then now this has become one of the biggest issues in the campaign. This is what I hear all the time out there when I'm outdoors. You know, we need to have our right to safe access to abortions protected. And so we ran on it in our primary. And then, you know, that's what speaks to the voters. I want people to look at me as somebody who's going to fight for them, not as, you know, my identity. My identity is important to me, but they want somebody in Madison who's going to fight for them.
And you are such a fighter. So background on our relationship, we ran for state assembly together in 2020. And you came to this from a very organic place. Can you talk a little bit about what it was that inspired you to run for public office in the first place, and then how you got to where you are now?
Yeah, I was doing a podcast show for a while way back in the day. This is kind of like, I've been living as female now as myself for over 8 years. So this is probably about the time when I first kind of came out as transgender. I was kind of running like a little LGBTQ, little political podcast, and I had Jocasta Zamarupa on with me. And at the time she was elected to the state legislature, and now she is in Alder in Milwaukee. And she said after the show, she goes, you know, there's never been a transgender woman in our state legislature before, and I would love to see you to be the first. So something historic about this race is not only would I be the first here in Wisconsin, I would be the second one in the state Senate nationally behind Sarah McBride in Delaware. So when we run for office and we bring up these issues, people see us out there, we are visible to our constituents. My hope is always to have more LGBTQ people step up to the plate, because then they see that we're doing it. Hey, she's doing it. I can do it too. And especially after winning this historic primary last week.
Mm-hmm. I love that somebody saw something in you and knew that you had what it took to be a leader and to speak with the voice of the people. And they tapped you and you said, you know, I can do this. To have the courage to do what you've done, I think is really extraordinary. And I'm so grateful to you.
Thank you for that. Yeah, it does take a lot of courage because you're putting your whole life basically out there. As you know, Kristen, from running back in 2020, you know, people will say things about you that's not true, or people worship you like you're some type of god, or excuse me, or you'll have people who hate you for no reason. And you know, you all know that I'm probably one of the most sweetest people you'll ever meet. But I'm also a fierce fighter because I know what's right for our democracy and for what people want to have in our district as a leader. And That's what we kind of made that stark contrast with my opponent in the primary. So, and that's what people trust me to lead them.
Right. And so it's noted, you know, in the news story here that there's a record number of LGBTQ candidates, more than 1,000 nationwide. Among them are 46 trans women, 27 of them running for state legislature. But you're not only running, you're running as somebody who won a primary in your party. So this isn't some token, you know, candidacy. This is something where it was a competitive race in this district to make the ballot. So what was the key to your success in the primary?
I think I just worked off of my strengths. I think Kristen will probably say the same thing about me. My strengths are networking with people, building up my networks, and not just here locally in the district, but also statewide, because you're going to need that network when it comes to things like fundraising, which is so important in a campaign. I'm not the richest person in the world. I've worked 2 part-time jobs before to make ends meet. So that's why I knew like building that network is key. Finding those key supporters in a community who's going to talk to other people about you and get other people to vote for you, because I can't do everything alone myself. And then keep in mind, my primary opponent was no pushover candidate. He was a two-time former congressional candidate in there. He had a lot of name recognition. And honestly, I kind of think that maybe he thought I was pushover or something or whatever, but we just won the game on the ground. And that's what happened.
Let's talk about the district. We should have gotten into that by way of background. Tell us about it's the 5th State Senate District, right?
That is correct. Yes. The 5th State Senate District is in the Western Milwaukee suburbs. I'm in West Allis where I live here. It's the western part of West Allis, the western and northern parts of Wauwatosa, Elm Grove, Brookfield, and New Berlin. Now, Brookfield, places like Brookfield was traditionally really, really red, but now it's more purple. A good friend of mine who's running for state assembly over there now, Sarah Harrison, who's running for Sarah Rodriguez's old seat. She ran for school board in Waukesha and barely lost. So it was basically a 50-50 race. And it shows how the population shifts from the city out to the suburbs. And this is why this is going to be a really close race. And this is an important race too, because this is a save the veto race for a governor. So we want Tony Evers to be reelected, but we also need to make sure we keep his veto power in the state Senate so none of these horrible GOP bills get through.
So your race has been identified as one that's winnable here in the state, because we know, due to profound gerrymandering, there are a lot of races that are going to be really uphill climbs. But yours is winnable, and it's necessary in order to preserve the veto power for Governor Evers.
Yes, it's very winnable. I would say it's probably a 50-50 race here. And after winning the primary last week, people are energized. And I feel that electricity out there. And that's what we need as Democrats in order to get somebody like me over the top. And it's so exciting to see all the love and support myself and my campaign team has received. We're really feeling that energy. I'll walk down the street, I'll have people honking their horns at me, like, hey, go Jessica. I'm like, hey, awesome. You know, and this shows that I'm really a champion of the people in my district and that I will fight for them in Madison. And that's what they want. They want to change.
We covered in our 8 o'clock hour with Sarah Rodriguez, who's running for lieutenant governor, the notion that, you know, she's from Waukesha, represents the Brookfield area. And again, for, you know, the bulk of our audience, which is up north and not entirely familiar with the Milwaukee metropolitan area, the moment you hear Waukesha in any way, shape or form, you think, well, this is, you know, David versus Goliath. It's a Republican behemoth. It can't be done. But, you know, in the last election cycle and now in this one as well, and in the presidential numbers that came in, tell folks outside of the Milwaukee area about the changes that are being seen in Waukesha and in the north areas north of Milwaukee. Things aren't what they always used to be from a partisan vote standpoint, are they?
No, they're not. I mean, Waukesha is known as a part of the Wild Counties, which is Waukesha, Washington, and then Ozaukee counties. Washington, for reference, is northwest of Milwaukee. Ozaukee is just north of Milwaukee, and these are traditionally deep red areas. I would say Washington and Ozaukee County are probably still pretty red, but it seems like, you know, when you have the population shifts, when people are kind of moving outside of the city and gentrifying these the suburbs of Milwaukee, I mean, I won West Dallas in 2020 when I ran for state assembly, and I pulled in over 40% of the vote in New Berlin, which is a pretty huge accomplishment because that is known as a really deep red area in our district. But the way we did it is just through our messaging. I ran on a progressive platform in the primary, and we were able to sell that to the voters in our district, even the ones who may be leaning Democrats or maybe independent who voted on our side. And it shows you can win on progressive politics. You just have to know how to sell it.
You got it. And you talked about population shifts, but I think you're exactly right. I think it's the issues, and the issues are changing and becoming more relevant to people and more unifying as we start thinking about who are we and what's important to us. What are those issues that you are really focusing on to bring together your area?
Well, obviously, pro-choice seems to be the number one issue right now, and it's going to be the number one issue going into the general election here. I think inflation is a huge issue right now. I mean, I've felt it. I'm sure everybody in the northern Wisconsin has felt it as well, too, where my minivan, it cost me $75 to fill up when it's all the way empty. I mean, it takes a little hit out of you. Also, protecting our democracy, expanding voting rights, and then also common sense gun laws. We've seen a record number of mass shootings here in this country. And I think it's our right as humans that we should be able to go to places like malls, shopping centers, or sporting events and feel safe to go to these events without, you know, without fear. Is this going to be a place going to be shot up? Or same with our kids. We should be able to send our kids to the schools every day. And, you know, they should not have to fear for their own safety. It's a crazy world that we are living in.
You're talking about the commonality of values. There are plenty of hunters and gun owners who don't want their kids, you know, killed in a school shooting. They are in favor of common sense, you know, gun safety laws. And you have people who are not going to be mistaken for rabid Democrats, but they want government to leave their bodies alone when it comes to regulating them. So you're probably hearing a lot more commonality than in past cycles.
Right, exactly. And it's like the message is, you know, we don't want to take everybody's guns away, but we want to make sure that we have common sense laws in place. And this is the same thing when it comes to stuff like our rights, like taking those Republican buzzwords like freedom, saying it's our freedom to choose what we want to do with our body, with abortion, to living how we want to live our life. And that's how we've been effective in our messaging.
We're talking to Jessica Katzenmeier, candidate for state Senate in the 5th District. We're going to talk more about some of the issues that are going to be on the ballot for any legislative race across Wisconsin as people make their choices come November. Along with Kristen Lierley, I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Back with Jessica Katzenmeier, candidate for state Senate in the 5th District, western areas of Milwaukee. And we had been talking about your primary race, and it is worth noting that you were somewhat surprised at the turnout. And we come to find out that Wisconsin hit a 40-year high for this primary election, a voter turnout level, which is still relatively small, you know, the mid to upper 20s% of all voters turning out, but still haven't seen numbers like that since 1982. Jessica, what's the motivation?
I think people are just energized out there. You know, they know how important these elections are in November. We've seen the constant attacks on our democracy. If the wrong people get elected, I mean, who knows what could be happening in terms of 2024 if President Trump decides to run again for office. I mean, we may be looking at seeing elections trying to be overturned if the right people don't get reelected. So I think there's a lot of that energy from that they realize that how important these are. And in my race alone, we had a win number of the primary of going into it about 8,000. And we hit, 9,085. And my opponent had something like 7,600. So what is that, about 16, 17,000 voters altogether in the district. So we were really pleased with the turnout. And we didn't really expect that high of a turnout either. But then again, we didn't expect a high turnout in 2020, yet there was over 80% of the vote that came in Milwaukee County. And we weren't for sure where those votes were gonna go. So it's pretty crazy to see this, but it's great to see people who care about a democracy and wanna get out there and make their voices heard.
Yeah.
Well, there's no. Go ahead, Kristen.
I was going to say, I think all bets are off. Like even in 2020, all bets were off because of the pandemic. And now all bets are off because whether or not we recognize it, the pandemic is still here. It's actually really, really very much still here right now. But we've got January 6th and we've got all of this post-Roe stuff that's happening. And there are so many issues that I think people are feeling more engaged and more inspired to do something. And one of the easiest things you can do is vote.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's how you make your voice heard. You know, something like January 6th happens. Now, my race is a key race in the state Senate to keep that veto power. But imagine if the governor does not have that, how many bad bills would be laws today, you know, from the governor's term starting in 2018, or what could be happening in the future? Of course, you know, there's 1849 law on the books now that we reverted back to when Roe was overturned, which was passed 1 year after we became a state. And of course, there was no women elected to the legislature at that time making those decisions. That
we couldn't even vote back then. Right. It took 70 more years before we could even vote.
Right, exactly. And, you know, this is why these elections all matter. And people are really seeing that now, that we did have the right candidates in office, and they see that I'm that fighter and that I'm gonna fight for the rights.
Well, I hate to be that wet blanket, but I will. Part of the reason that voter turnout has been up as well is as I've said before, there are people who were not involved before. And then somebody like Donald Trump came along and they said, yeah, finally, somebody reflects, you know, my values. And this is a group of people, a minority, but still a group of people who are spreading, you know, lies about the election and about democracy itself, really. They will still be out there. And you're in an area mighty close to that solid red suburban territory that is still holding on to the big lie, even as they know it's not true. How are you hearing that handled around your district, and how confrontational do you get in your response, or do you just smile and nod and say, well, I'm never going to win their vote anyway, and you walk away?
I mean, I think it was the last part of what you said there. That's kind of what you end up doing when you get the haters on you. Haters are going to hate. And that's one of the things I've learned as being a trans candidate, whether it's, you know, because me being trans or because I have a D by my name, whatever, maybe the value that I stand for. So what we always do is just kill them with kindness, you know, and I always try to tell them, you know, when I'm elected as your state senator, I represent everybody. It's not just Republicans and Democrats, but everybody in between as well, too. And I would still go up to your house, even if you had 20 Trump flags flying in your yard, and talk to you, because that's what our job is. And I hope that they realize that. But I think that's the best approach to the haters, is just kill them with kindness and show that we take the higher road.
You're so right. And I love that you say, I represent everyone, because that is truly who you are. And I want to go back to something that Pat said, which I'm going to take issue with. You said that voters recognize Trump as somebody who they connect with values wise. And I don't think that's it. I think that a giant block of the Trump voters want something that's just different. And I think that when you actually ask about the values piece, they brush that aside because they so desperately want something different. They so desperately want change in government. And this is what we've ended up with. So if we can, in a safe way, help people recognize that what you bring, what so many of these exciting candidates like Christina Shelton, who we talked with in our last hour, bring to the table, is that change that people want so desperately, but just haven't been able to access.
Yeah, and just, you know, getting that trust of people that, hey, when I'm elected, I'm going to be there for you, you know, no matter what your values are. And if you have values that are different from mine, what we try to do is we try to find some of that common ground and make progress happen from there. And that's still progress. Even if we might not get everything that we want, we still made progress happen. And that's something that I think is lost today. And our legislature is that not people don't want, really want to work together anymore. There's so much fighting between Democrats and Republicans. And, you know, we need to work together again. I mean, at least Voss finally fired Gableman for spending over $1 million on the fake election investigations, you know. But I mean, we need to come together and show that we're a government working for the people again.
It's true. Pat, did you know that Voss fired Gableman? Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I might have heard a thing or two about it. But I mean, just I think it was yesterday again that Voss was essentially, well, he was defending hiring Gableman. He said he has no regrets, that it was, you know, Gableman who had kind of lost his way. And yet it was Gableman who sent him a memo that we didn't learn about till recently, saying, you know, decertification probably isn't going to be possible anymore. Voss didn't fire him or end the investigation at that point. It went on until Gableman actually went up against Voss's opponent. So, Jessica, I wonder, the Republican Party, it is in fact at war with itself right now. It, you know, and depending on where you are, you know, like Wyoming, you know, the Trumpers are all in it. In Voss's district, you know, there's still enough people that haven't bought into it. What is the Republican infighting? How apparent is it in your part of the state? Do you have people, for example, that might lean Republican, but they're going to vote for you because they feel like their old party has lost its way?
I truly believe so, you know, and I think that's a way that we can win over some of those leaning Republicans that we will need to make sure that we secure a good victory here in November. I think that the Republicans have strayed away from their values, say from 10, 20 years ago, what they used to stand for. And that shows in what happened in Wyoming last night when Liz Cheney lost her re-election bid. I may disagree with Liz Cheney's values, but I have a lot of respect for her because she stood up to Trump, you know, And I think that Republicans are more either, it's like either you're for Trump or you're not for Trump. And that kind of seems like what we're seeing here. Now, in my general election opponent, Rob Hunnan, I looked and I saw that he took money from people like Scott Fitzgerald, a max contribution. Scott Fitzgerald's being investigated by the FBI for election fraud right now for running the room of the state capitol for the fake electors. And so that tells me that he lines up with those views, those extremist views, and probably supports what happened on January 6th, where Scott Fitzgerald, for all intents and purposes, should be disqualified from the ballot, according to amendment, the 14th Amendment, Section 3 of the Constitution.
You're so right. It is just crazy. Like, let's take a step back and just look from an outside perspective. It's what's happening in the world right now and how ridiculous it is. And the fact that there is a significant proportion of people who, even though they don't believe it, still are going along with that faction of the Republican Party because they know that that's where the power is. I mean, we had Mark Becker talking to Ron Johnson, essentially admitting, like, I don't believe any of this, but this is what I'm saying because I have to. It's my political life.
And despite that, we know that there are real world problems to deal with, including attracting people to Wisconsin and stop doing the things that drive people away. We're going to post a news story today at Up North News that for many school districts, they've reached a tipping point in terms of the teacher shortage. They were always, or for a long time, they've been a little bit short, especially since Act 10, but now it's getting really bad. And the Cap Times has a new article about caregivers, the caregiver shortage in Wisconsin. 1 in 4 caregiver jobs is going unfilled, higher than it's been. It's that chasing people away instead of bringing them in. So Jessica, when people talk to you about, you know, it's been, you know, called the brain drain. I think that might be a little too extreme, but what is it that we have to do and what can you as a legislator do to show people that this is a state where you want to live and where you want to work, where you want to spend your professional life?
Well, a big part of my platform is infrastructure, rebuilding our infrastructure. I mean, how many potholes do we hit over a day? I've lost a few tires this past year in my car because of potholes on the road. And, you know, like things like that. Like, who wants to live in a state that has horrible roads? Who wants to live in a state that's got horrible public transportation? Who wants to live in a state that does not support their public school teachers? And, you know, these are all things that we've crafted into our policies on this campaign, is we might need to support those public school teachers, making sure they're paid fairly and compensating fairly so that people will want to do this at, you know, as a noble profession of teaching our future. Things like, you know, investing in high-speed rail from Milwaukee and Madison to Chicago is a very popular issue in my district, and expanding rail throughout the rest of the state as well. I mean, when people have easier modes of transportation to get to and from work or to travel, businesses are going to want to relocate to these lines. People are going to want to relocate to these lines, and that's going to be an increase in jobs and an increase in their economic value into those areas. So I look at the economic sides of it.
Totally. You know, I was talking to my 16-year-old the other day, and he was telling me how terrible our public transportation is and how he would so much rather take a train somewhere to do something. And it was so enlightening to me because I'm kind of locked into my car. Like, I love having a car, but that's my generation. And his generation thinks very differently, which is why it's important to be progressive and forward thinking. And you hit on some really important messages that Governor Evers has been able to fulfill. So he has fixed the damn roads. He does support public schools. The Democrats are on the right side of this, and you are part of this movement that really does want to make a difference here in Wisconsin. But Pat, when we hand it off to the legislature, what do they do when the governor calls them into special session how many times this year and they gavel in and gavel out within a minute?
Yeah. And I'm sure, Jessica, that's a point you're making of a legislature that should actually want to work and earn its pay.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's kind of like, again, with our messaging, how do we market ourselves? How do I market myself as a candidate? How do we network with people? It's with our messaging. And I like to use some of those Republican buzzwords, like I said before, like with freedoms, and economics is another one too, that they like to try to talk economics. But hey, let's talk economics about why do we need to legalize marijuana in the state for recreational and medicinal? Why do we need to have a better infrastructure? Why do we need to have clean energy policies? Like for marijuana, for example, Illinois is 35 minutes south of here. Every time somebody drives to Illinois to buy marijuana down there, that's taxpayer money that's being taken out of Wisconsin and being put into Illinois' economy. So, Wisconsin dollars need to stay in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm.
So along with all those economic issues and the history-making issues behind your candidacy, behind the scenes, what do you like to do? Apparently you've got a musical bent to you.
Yes, I do. I love singing. I am always doing some sort of karaoke later at night because it's very therapeutic to me. I've been taking professional voice lessons now for about a year out of the Conservatory of Music on the east side of Milwaukee. I've been singing for over 14 years, and I think it's a good way to release your emotions. And I've also started to write my own music too.
There you go.
Let's do a karaoke night.
There we
Let's
go.
Do karaoke night.
You could see it coming a mile away. Jessica Katzenmeyer, candidate for state senate. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. We'll be back to wrap up our conversation today in just a bit. You're up north.
Providing your news talk and sports, we are Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 FM and WXCO, 1230 AM.
You never close your eyes anymore when I kiss.
You're baiting me. I just know you're baiting me. You're looking for reason for somebody to bust out in song, and you know that Kristen's the one who's going to do that.
It's your turn.
She made the Hall & Oates reference earlier. Yeah. Well, I'm not doing the duet. Sorry.
Oh, wait, Pat, this is your part.
It's I'm sorry, I can't hear the music anymore. There must be a technical issue. Brewers were winners 5-4 over the Dodgers in 11 innings, thanks to a 2-run walk-off single by Victor Caratini. They play again this evening, then tomorrow afternoon, and that's the first of 4 day games in a row, tomorrow at home, and then 3 day games, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, against the Chicago Cubs before they travel out to LA to play the Dodgers yet again.
Did you see how hard Christian Yelich hit that baseball last night, though?
I did see the Christian Yelich home run. His first one at home since early May, his first home run overall in
July 2nd.
Well over a month.
Yeah, July 2nd. So he hit that ball. There was so much frustration in that baseball that you could just see it. It soared. It was like 450 feet almost. Like,
wow.
Gone.
451. And Bill Schroeder was saying, boy, you can just see the relief on his face. And you could. They cut to him in the dugout. And he just looked like, you know, such a weight had been taken off his shoulders, you know. So we'll, and then, you know, you've got the Packers. Are they at home this Friday?
Oh, heck yeah, they are. Okay. We've got a Friday night game against the Saints, and we've got practices with the Saints, I believe, today and tomorrow.
Okay. Now, do you attend the practices?
I have.
Okay.
I like to ride my bike around town. That's my exercise. So it's not unusual for me to bike over. You know, the practices are busy. Like, there are people all over the place, and there are bleachers, and they're free to attend. So it's a pretty great event.
That's awesome. You know, my exposure to Lambeau Field has been, you know, in really cold weather but actually also being down on the field when I worked for TV 13, and Bob Gallagher was our sports guy. He would, you know, bring somebody along to, you know, hold the microphone while he held the camera and covered things. So you'd be actually behind the bench, you know, down there on the field during the game. And I'd love to tell you that it's, you know, exciting and thrilling. It is for about 3 seconds. And then, you know, you're working. So you have to just jump right into it. And this was during the Brett Favre era, of course, because this was a while back. But I remember being in the locker room after a Packer game. And you as a doctor, Kristen, you know how beat up these guys must get, how they feel after a game.
Oh, yeah. I was an athletic trainer in high school.
Oh, okay. I mean, so you know very well. And I think it was stunning for me, though. I mean, you know they're getting beat up. But when you mm-hmm. see them in the locker room and you see they are just spent. I mean, they look like they've been put through, you know, the meat grinder. And it shows. And I remember seeing some guys were having, you know, either food delivered or went to go get food. And Brett Favre was at his locker and an entire pizza had been put, you know, next to him on like the bench or something. And we'd, of course, we'd been working throughout the game. And you think, how great would it be if, I think Favre's about to say something like, hey, you know, anybody want a piece? You know, great guy. He's gonna, you know, share his pizza with us. We go to interview some other guy, somebody else at his locker. I turn back and Brett Favre has finished that entire pizza.
Do you not have teenage sons? That's not unusual. No, Luke, back me up.
Of course, it made total sense as soon as I saw it. I mean, how many calories do you burn, you know, playing an NFL game? But it, for a quick moment, I'm like, he just ate that entire pizza.
Yeah, my go-to after a soccer game when senior year of high school, I was on the varsity soccer team and on the drum line. And so any typical day, I was burning a ton of calories. I would go through 2 dozen wings from Buffalo Wild Wings on Thursdays because those would be really long days. I go get the 60-cent boneless wings, 2 dozen of them, and I'd polish them off in seconds flat.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. That would be an interesting question for people based on, you know, as far back as you can remember, which for me would be a teenage boy. What's the most of something that you've ever eaten? You know, without and not being like a competitive eater, but you look back and go, I don't know how I ate that much, you know, for we talked about sweet corn last week. And I remember at one point my grandma making up a big old pile of sweet corn. And next thing I knew, 7 cobs were gone. But it was just that delicious. Now, you will rarely get, you know, a woman, especially an athlete here like, you know, Kristen to admit it. But we're going to ask anyway. Got any memories of something where you really pigged out?
Oh, yeah. I remember hiding behind a chair and eating an entire bag of taco Dorito chips. And then my mom was like, where are the chips? And I'm like, oh.
I like the occasional reminder that you're almost in my age range because I don't know that anybody remembers taco Dorito chips. Those go way back.
They're back.
I know they're back, but they were gone for the longest time.
Mm-hmm. They're so good. Or maybe it's just the memory.
It's probably the memory because I've gone back to it since. And
I have them in my closet. I'm not joking.
Do you really?
Yeah. It's like the food version of Yacht Rock for me. It's soothing.
For us, we've learned because it's just the two of us now at home, and we have a favorite frozen pizza, lots of matzah, and I mean we love it. We've learned that we have to buy the small one because I mean, you know what happens with pizza when there's only like, you know, 2 slices left, but you're full, but there's only 2 slices left. So I mean, one for you, one for me, you know, and then you regret it, of course, afterwards. You're running for the Pepcid, you know, before too much terribly. And so you have to, oh my God, the babysitting you have to do to yourself as you get older for what you eat. And do you take the little Pepcid tablet beforehand, or do you take the great big one, you know, an hour after you ate because you waited far too long? So this week, or this past weekend, I made a lasagna, and I make a pretty good lasagna. And of course, that is a very heavy tomato-based sauce. And this is where we are in life now, that we both knew, well, it's tomato-based, it's heavy, so, you know, we can't have too much. And these are the conversations we're now having.
Pat walked over to get the lasagna, limped over on his bad knee to get the lasagna out of the oven.
That's all good now.
Which dose of Pepcid should I take now?
this is what life has come to, is when and what type of antacid do you have?
I didn't mention that it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon when this all happened.
And what restrictions do you put on yourself? Because you know your body well enough that either it's going to give you an upset stomach, or worse, it's going to make noises, much like we talked about off air. Why I and a lot of men don't do yoga, because it's noisy in there. And we're not talking about the music, kids. So
everybody farts, Pat. Everybody farts.
You know, let's just cue that up. That's words of wisdom. Well, I'm an actual medical doctor. So if that makes anybody feel better, you probably have to say that in the exam room, you know, more than once or twice occasionally. So on that happy note, folks, we're going to wrap up our show. Kristen Lyerly, who most Wednesdays will join us with Kirk Bangstad, but he's away. So I think it's all you and me next week one more time, if you're brave enough.
I'm so in.
Okay. Hey, I appreciate it.
We're singing now.
Appreciate it. I better talk all the way through this or she's going to sing. That'll do it for us. I'm Pat Whitelow. You're up north. Have a great day.